something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And today we're talking about a piece of history that touches most people, and probably most people that are listening to this podcast in English.
Yes.
But it also touches many other languages, and that is the Phoenician alphabet. And it actually, I was inspired to research this a little bit because last time I was in Epcot and I was riding Spaceship Earth, which for anyone who doesn't know, that big geodesic sphere in the middle of the front of the park that's kind of their icon, there's actually a ride in that. It's a very gentle and calm, but air-conditioned, which is important.
And you get to sit down for a while.
Ride, yes, through sort of the history of man and how we've evolved communications and our communication methods. And the ride broke down as we were just adjacent to the Phoenician trader ship. And so it was an unusually long breakdown. So for like 15 to 20 minutes, I just kept hearing over and over Dame Judi Dench saying, "Remember how easy it was to learn your ABCs? Thank the Phoenicians. They invented them." So after you hear that 100 times, you start to think you should thank the Phoenicians and do some research. And that is how we landed here.
I'm sort of imagining you in a no TV and no beer make home or something moment. Inside of Spaceship Earth.
Well, to be fair, I really do love that ride, and I love watching the animatronics, and I kind of enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But it did sort of eventually bore into my brain and make me want to do some more research. So just for a little background on the Phoenicians, Phoenicia was situated on the eastern side of the Mediterranean, so along the coast of modern-day Syria and Palestine, and including the lands of modern-day Lebanon. But they were pretty coastal. Their actual land wasn't very expansive, which is likely why they turned to the sea and life as merchants for most of their income and sort of well-being.
So while today the Phoenicians may be known most for their alphabet, they innovated in other ways as well.
And one of my favorites is they knew how to make purple dye, which most people who have studied history at all know is kind of a huge deal. It's a big textile advancement. They were actually known for making some pretty impressive textiles. And the earliest example of their production of this so-called royal purple, which is a dye that was actually worth more than its weight in gold, was found in the excavations of the 13th century BCE levels of the Phoenician city of Sarepta in Lebanon. And incidentally, And related to this, we don't really know what the Phoenicians called themselves. The name is actually Greek in origin, and it's believed to signify the color purple-red that they were known for making, which is kind of interesting.
So the dye was so important, they named a whole people after it.
Yeah, it was a huge part of their culture that was one of the things they had innovated.
Some accounts even credit the Phoenicians with the discovery of glassmaking.
And I read a few different versions of how that was discovered, which is why I qualify it as some accounts.
Mm-hmm.
They did make glass, but whether they actually discovered it or picked it up and then refined it, some historians argue about.
Yeah, I should have asked the boyfriend.
Oh, yeah, because he's a pro at,
yes,
at how these things come to be.
He has a degree in glass science.
Yeah. Ask him and we'll get back to that one. But they were also really great shipmakers and sailors. And according to legend, one of their greatest sort of accomplishments in terms of seafaring was at the request of the Egyptian king Necho II, and they circumnavigated Africa in 600 BCE, which is huge. I mean, that's a long
journey. It's a very long voyage.
And most accounts suggest that they actually stopped at one point and made land and lived on the land for a little while and got some crops going to sort of refill the boats.
Yeah, it seems like some sort of restocking would have been necessary just for what it takes to support people on a boat.
Yeah, and in 2008, there was a reproduction built of a Phoenician ship, and it actually sailed the same course. And that's like a 20,000-mile voyage, so that's long. And it took that modern vessel 2 years. So presumably you would have run out of supplies in a 2-year period.
Yeah.
And would have had to restock. There are actually some historians who suspect that the Phoenicians traveled all the way to North America, although that is argued in history circles.
It's a controversial idea.
Yeah. There's a March 2013 CNN article about the possibility, and in it they interviewed geology professor Dr. Mark McMenamin of Mount Holyoke College, and he mentions that there are actually Phoenician coins that are inscribed with maps of the Old and New Worlds, which supports this idea that they did, in fact, make it to the Americas at some point. And the same group that recreated that circumnavigation of Africa is currently raising funds to sail that same ship across the Atlantic and try to see if that was truly possible. Because unlike where they went around Africa and they could kind of pull in and stop, there's nowhere to pull in. There's no rest stop between there and here.
Yeah, the idea of going across.
They could find islands, but that's kind of a little bit of a long shot.
Yeah. Well, and the idea of going across the whole Atlantic Ocean in a little tiny boat is kind of terrifying to me.
It's not so tiny. It's certainly not a cruise ship. But
no.
It's
yeah, if I'm traveling across the whole Atlantic, I kind of want there to be, you know,
a floating city.
Lifeboats and a safety drill before we leave.
Yeah.
About how to get into the lifeboats.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, I haven't read a lot about this particular plan, but I'm sure they have support crew always at the ready, because they are hooked up to, like, GPS and stuff.
Yeah. They traded all over the Mediterranean and parts beyond, and their culture is recognized as the first real globalized business.
Which is pretty cool. And about the alphabet. So prior to this alphabet, the Phoenicians were using a cuneiform script, just like the rest of Mesopotamia was.
The roots of the Phoenician alphabet are in the 15th century BCE in what's sometimes referred to as the Proto-Canaanite or Proto-Sinaitic alphabet. The earliest examples of Phoenician writing date back to 1200 BCE, and they are inscriptions found in the city of Byblos.
And it is no accident that Byblos is also the root word for bibliothèque and Bible.
And bibliography.
Exactly. All of the book-related words. If you were to look at a linguistic family tree of alphabets, Phoenician would be really close to the base. And because the Phoenicians traded with so many other cultures, their form of written communication spread really quickly and really widely. Most other alphabets can actually be traced back to the Phoenician alphabet. So the direct descendants of it include Aramaic, Etruscan, Archaic Greek, Old Hebrew, and Proto-Arabic. And there is also even some influence in Indian and East Asian language.
only consonants are represented in the Phoenician alphabet. There are no vowels. This is also called an Abjad alphabet.
It made me think of, when I was researching it, when you see people's license plates that just have, you know, a very reduced version of a word and you have to kind of fill in the vowels.
Yeah.
Because initially I was like, how did that work? But that was kind of my modern ticket into how that might function.
Or old real estate listings from before the internet, when you only had so many column inches in the newspaper.
And there are actually only 22 letters. And those letters can be traced back to hieroglyphs in many cases. So their form, and even there's often in some historical accounts kind of a flowchart of how, like, this word for ox turned into this shape, which turned into this letter, which has similar sound or whatever. So it was born of these other things, but it filled a void of sound-based alphabet.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Generally, Phoenician was written from right to left, but in some instances it was written in a Buster-Feeden style, which means that it would alternate direction. One line would be written from right to left, and the next from left to right. The alternating direction would continue, so somebody reading the language could read their way down a passage of text without ever having to jump visually to the start of a new line, which, as a child, I just wondered why that was not how we did it.
Well, it has been tried.
Apparently.
But mostly Phoenician, to the best of my knowledge, does go from right to left, and you do have to do the jump just like we do in our left to right reading of English. There were also not normally spaces between words, which seems a little bit crazy, I think, to the modern mind. But there were sometimes dots to distinguish words, and sometimes there were vertical slashes, like a vertical stroke. But eventually, spaces did come into play. And by the 6th century BCE, spaces were becoming more common than the dots or the vertical strokes to create word separation.
The Phoenician numeral system was also written from right to left, and it bears a resemblance to the Roman numeral system. It combines symbols to create complex numbers, a lot like Roman numerals do.
Yeah. And much of the Old Testament was originally written down using the Phoenician alphabet, because there weren't really any other options in the way of a standardized writing system at the time that was an actual alphabet and not pictogram.
So why did the Phoenicians want to create an alphabet in the first place?
There is a very short answer for this.
Bookkeeping.
Yes. They were trading. Roman scholar Pliny the Elder is credited with defining the Phoenicians as the first traveling salesmen. And Pliny the Elder gets a little bit of a grain of salt with anything you read. He was apparently given to exaggeration, and he was very, very pro-Phoenician. Like, he really admired that culture. But it is pretty widely accepted that he was accurate in this characterization of them, because they were traveling all over the place, and their entire culture was really based on trade.
So as we mentioned, they traveled all over the Mediterranean and maybe even the globe. The goal of the new alphabet was to create a system that would be easy to learn and understand by their business associates. And before this, written communication had been pretty pictogram-based. It was so diversified that different societies could not share written information and have everyone know what the symbols meant. So the Phoenicians found this way to break words down into characters with different sounds that could be combined to create any number of words. Because this was a written codification of sound instead of pictograms, it was easily adaptable to multiple languages.
And because this alphabet was invented to record and track trades, the alphabet itself sort of became traded. It was the language of business transactions, but it also got adopted for general use because it filled this void of systemized writing that was, again, not pictogram-based, that people could pick up pretty easily.
Yeah, and that lets you more easily transliterate other languages.
Exactly.
Cadmus the Phoenician is giving credit for introducing the alphabet of his people to the Greeks, as told in the writings of Herodotus.
And Herodotus says, "The Phoenicians who came with Cadmus introduced into Greece, after their settlement in the country, a number of accomplishments, of which the most important was writing, an art till then, I think, unknown to the Greeks. At first they used the same characters as all the other Phoenicians, but as time went on and they changed their language, they also changed the shape of their letters. At that period, most of the Greeks in the neighborhood were Ionians. They were taught these letters by the Phoenicians and adopted them, with a few alterations for their own use, continuing to refer to them as the Phoenician characters, as was only right as the Phoenicians had introduced them." So even though it had evolved, they still attributed its the alphabet to the Phoenicians.
We should point out that even though this was a defined writing system, there were variations on the alphabet in different Phoenician colonies. Cypro-Phoenician, Sardinian, and the Punic and Neo-Punic, which is the cursive version of Punic versions found in Carthage. The Carthage versions of the alphabets continued to be used until about the 3rd century CE.
And with the development of this new written alphabet also came new ways of writing. So it kind of catalyzed a whole new age of communication. Wax tablets came into being where they could imprint letters into the wax. Pens, ink, papyrus, parchment, and eventually paper kind of all came from this development. So it was a very rapid growth element in the world of communication.
In 332 BCE, Alexander the Great put Phoenicia under Greek control. And then in 146 BCE, Rome demolished Carthage after pursuing Hannibal there after the Second Punic War. And what was left of Phoenicia became part of the Roman Empire.
And ironically, very few instances of Phoenician writings actually remain. The papyrus that they often wrote on and some of those early forms of paper has really not survived terribly well. What we know mostly is from other cultures writing about how awesome the Phoenicians were and about their alphabet and its development. The oldest surviving Phoenician writing example, which we briefly mentioned earlier, is in Byblos, and it's on the sarcophagus of King Ahiram, and it's dated at approximately 1200 BCE. And most of what we know, like I said, has actually come from the writings of the Greeks. So even though the Phoenicians have kind of, there's a little bit of a shroud of lack of information around them from them, other cultures wrote about them enough that we know about them.
Yes.
Which is really cool.
So now if you're stuck in spaceship Earth, you'll know.
Thank the Phoenicians. They invented them. Also, the way that Dame Judi Dench says that is so charming that I will never, ever forget it. It's pretty awesome.
It's because Dame Judi Dench is awesome.
Yeah, she is. Prior to her, it was Walter Cronkite that narrated that ride, but then they updated it a few years back, and she took it over and did a beautiful job.
Holly, would you like to take a second to talk about stamps?
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you also have some listener mail?
You know it. I have a few pieces. It's a little bit of a hodgepodge. The first one is a lesson and an apology and a correction, which is from our listener, Nicole, regarding the use of the word Orient in the Cats podcast. And this actually has a multi-part thing because the more I thought about it, the more I thought that could be talked about on its own for quite a bit. Early on in the podcast, I mentioned that the earliest representations of cats were in ancient Egypt and some other places. And then I mentioned some areas of the Orient, which is not an accurate use of that word. Orient is generally not used to refer to the place, certainly not to people, but it can be used for objects. But the reason it's fallen out of favor is that it's often associated with negative stereotypes. It, you know, kind of conjures exoticism, and it allows for some kind of contradictory postulating and generalization to happen. And I'm really super careful about it when referring to people, but I will admit that there are times when I'm looking at older texts, which I think the text that I was reading about that particular thing in the research was from like 1900, where this had not fallen out of favor yet, the use of the word Orient in that. So I think I just, you know, you fall into the habit sometimes of the things you're reading. Mm-hmm. So I apologize because it didn't set off my modern filter meter at all.
Right.
And I was just like, yes.
Well, and because there is also a cat breed,
yes,
that we discussed.
Yes, which I'll get to in one moment.
Okay.
I'm telling you, this has got me really thinking. So if you want to learn a whole lot about why that usage isn't correct, there is a really good essay at the Japan Society about it, and we'll link to that in the show notes. So normally you would use the word Asian to refer to a person from Asia, or Asia to refer to the region, unless you're referring to objects. So think of vases, rugs, I think some art you can do. But for clarity, as you mentioned, there are cat breeds that are, their actual name is Orientals. There's Oriental short hair, Oriental long hair, and sometimes people group some of the other breeds that come primarily from Asia under that as well, which then got me thinking about a whole other problem, because, like we said, you could use Oriental to refer to objects, but I think most pet people would not want to think of their cats as objects.
Right.
So that gets into a whole other conflict of meaning and, you know, appropriateness.
Yeah.
But it is a recognized breed under international cat regulations. If you look at any of the international cat societies that regulate sort of show cats and how breeding is handled, those breeds are listed. So that's a whole lot. But thank you for bringing that up, because it's a good thing to think about. And I made a whoopsie daisy. My second one, it's also about cats, and it is from our listener, Andrea, and she wrote to us on Facebook and said, "Hi, I just listened to the podcast on the domestication of cats, and I can't believe you didn't mention one of my all-time favorite quotes. It is from Mark Twain, and it is, 'When a man loves cats, I am his friend and comrade without further introduction,' which is kind of charming, and I agree. I generally trust a person that likes animals.
I like animals.
You're trustworthy.
We got some people who were sad that I don't like dogs as much. Or specifically my remarks about Cocker Spaniels.
They're not all bad.
They're, no.
Dog by dog basis.
Yeah, and it's mostly a result of inbreeding and things that are unfortunate.
Probably the Cocker Spaniels you grew up with were not delightful. But
no.
Yeah.
We've seen some adorable pictures of Cocker Spaniels who don't look bitey at all.
Bitey dogs come in all shapes, sizes, and breeds. That's what I know.
They do.
And sometimes cats will bite as well.
Yes.
And then I just wanted to say a thank you to our listener, Haley, who sent us a photo of her two super gorgeous cats. I will look at anybody's cat pictures if you want to send them. And if you would like to do that, you can do so by emailing them to historypodcast@discovery.com. You can also touch base with us on Twitter at @MistInHistory or at facebook.com/historyclassstuff. We're on Tumblr at mistinhistory.tumblr.com, and we're also on Pinterest. If you want to learn a little bit more about the subject we talked about today, you can go to our website, and if you enter the word language into the search bar, you will get a cool article called How Did Language Evolve? Which is, to me, ceaselessly fascinating. So you can learn about that, and a kajillion other things. That's the number I'm using at our website, which is howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Netflix streams TV shows and movies directly to your home, saving you time, money, and hassle. As a Netflix member, you can instantly watch TV episodes and movies streaming directly to your PC, Mac, or right to your TV with your Xbox 360, PS3, or Nintendo Wii console, plus Apple devices, Kindle, and Nook. Get a free 30-day trial membership. Go to www.netflix.com and sign up now.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.